apparently the women on YouTube think I'm quite attractive. And I've been called Death Daddy a number of times.
Daddy.
So you call me that if you felt comfortable.
I think Death Daddy will keep going for the rest of this podcast. So.
Apropos, if nothing else.
There we go.
Welcome to Our Dad's Side, featuring our guest, Death Daddy.
That was the Death Daddy, and that is this week's episode with Death Daddy himself, Victor M. Sweeney, an American mortician, on this week's episode of Our Dad's Died.
The M stands for murder.
It doesn't, I mean, more likely mortician, you'd
more
think,
likely,
but...
which would be nominative determinism.
Yes.
Although his name, Victor Sweeney, kind of is evocative of a mortician, no?
It really
is. It's not like sort of Mr. Cook being the village baker or Mr. Sausage the butcher. But Mr. Sweeney is what you would expect him to be called.
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe spend a little bit longer with Mr. Sausage. I don't think Mr. Sausage is the local butcher. I think Mr. Sausage is the guy that you tell your kids to stay away from.
He's Mr. Sausage. But it's friendly, but it's also like, but you know, don't get in his van.
If he offers you some sausage, then please do say no.
Please do say no.
Yeah.
Why are you teaching your kids things in such a confusing manner?
Trying to keep
do
it positive.
Do say no. Yeah, really, really try and freak him out. He's going to talk about a hell of a lot of things which are very, very serious, but we do cry laugh at several points. He talks about autopsies. He talks about the actual process of an autopsy, what that is. And so I am flagging to you, the listener, a trigger warning here. Right away, he's going to mention some very, very serious stuff about cadavers, which some listeners may find quite upsetting. This podcast, however, is not one that shies away from things that are hard to hear. Rather, we hear them and then start laughing very uncomfortably. There's a lot of information that we want to hear from him, but you might not want to. So if you don't, if this all sounds a bit too graphic for you, I'm going to drop in the timestamp here of the podcast outro, so you can just jump right to me and Rich chatting about nonsense at the end if you'd like. But if you like us and you feel you do need to know everything that happens after somebody dies, stick around as the Death Daddy, Victor M. Sweeney, gets right into it. The outro begins at 38:38. Skip to 38:38 for the outro.
So, first question, and I'm sure it's one you've been asked a lot, but what is it that made you want to become a mortician? Because it's not your usual...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, most morticians, it's a family business, where I would be what's called a first-generation funeral director. So I'm just starting off on my own, I guess. And truth be told, I always wanted to be a Catholic priest. That's what I always wanted to be from the time I was a little kid. Discerned that in through high school. And then when I had discerned that that's not the case, and I went to Catholic high school, I had a bunch of friends who went off to seminary, and I didn't. I was like, okay, great, now what? Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't really like math. I don't like science that much. I'm not interested in business. It ended up happening that my godfather gave me a book by a classmate of his who's a mortician poet, kind of a fun combo.
Right.
But he wrote a really good book. His name is Thomas Lynch. He wrote a book called The Undertaking. It has some memoir qualities and just it's a really poetic story of his life in funeral service in a small town. And I read that and I thought, you know what, that is something that I could do. It kind of scratches that religious itch and it puts you in a position where you can take care of somebody. And I really thought I could do that. I mean, really the only thing I'm good at really is talking to people. So I thought that would be a good fit. Then I just got a job in high school working at a local funeral home and just kind of stumbled into it, guys. That's how it happens. You just find yourself a funeral director one day.
And so when you took this job in high school, did that cause a bit of a stir? Because like other people might have been working at, let's say, Costco or Walmart, yeah. and you were like, I'm working in the funeral home.
Yeah, I'm working. Yeah, it was different. Yeah, what was interesting there is that, I mean, and this is probably the gauntlet as far as I understand. The first week there, I just like dinked around, cleaned caskets, vacuumed, you know, handed out funeral programs, really like didn't do anything of value. I was really surprised they were paying me to be there. And then like week one went by, week two, and then week three happened. And the owner's like, hey, Victor, we have had someone die and we'd like you to sit down in the embalming, is not, I don't think it's super legal. But at that point I was kind of thinking, you know, I was thinking this is what I was going to do. And, you know, you kind of just have to do it. So I go back to the prep room and I gown up and I get there and I was 18 and it was an 18-year-old girl who died in a car crash.
Oh, Jesus.
And, she'd been autopsied. So what that means is that they've examined all her organs. So she's cut from the, through the sternum down to the pubic bone and open.
Oh,
and
wow.
And all her organs are in a bag and it's like, yeah.
And so she's still, like, she's not been like stitched back up again. She's still.
Right. Right.
Wow.
And
okay.
That was, so that was awful.
Jesus.
I mean, yeah. Here's a beautiful girl cut down in the prime of life. You know, I'm just like a teenage guy and I'm like, you know, this is your first experience with this and you have to, like, if for anybody who hunts, if you've ever seen like a deer gutted, I don't know if you've ever done that sort of thing, but it's like so close to the same thing. It's scary. It's just open chest cavity. You can see like the backside of the ribs and like her, you know, they kind of open up and like her breast kind of like flops over. It was just terrible.
Oh God.
And so, yeah, so that was my first time seeing a dead body. And that was just absolutely awful.
Yeah.
And after that, then the next day, I was like, you know, I came home and my parents are like, Victor, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine, everyone. Like, don't talk to me. I'm going to go sit by myself for a while and just, like, think over what the hell I'm doing with my life.
Ugh, holy shit.
And then the next day, I sat in on another, and it was an infant.
Oh,
oh God,
mate.
So after that, you know, it got a lot easier. but man, I
throwing
you
into the deep end, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody ever had a worse introduction to that than me. But I figured if I could do that, like anything else is going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah, you've really done the hardest bit first. Although,
yeah.
I mean, again, it surprises me that you'd have that experience and then go, this is what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
Because
well,
I guess that's sort of a make or break moment for a lot of people. That would be, you'd see that and you'd go, I never ever want to go anywhere near that again. But
Reg,
it's different
view. It feels to me like Gambler's Dilemma. At that point, you've already, you're down so much already. It's like you have to see it through as a full career. Or otherwise, what did you witness those scenes for?
That's right. I mean, yeah. You know, if you're going to be scarred, you may as well put it to good use. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was kind of my first experience with that. But I mean, really, the, you know, you always have to keep the end in mind, right? There's the means. There's all the terrible things that a person in my position has to do, or at least terrible to anybody else but me. I mean, at this point, I'm kind of used to it. But there's always the end in mind that, you know, there's some family out there who's going to benefit from this. And so you're kind of taking that upon yourself and looking forward, you know, while you're kind of doing the gruesome tasks you sometimes have to do. And it's not all, I mean, and that's the thing to remember too, guys, it's not always gruesome. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, the hardest part of your day is working with the extremely needy family or the people who you just can't make happy. That's sometimes the hardest part. So I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes the actual body work is kind of a break because you can do a thing you're good at and you're not like doing it in front of people or being criticized.
Yeah. If they start criticizing you at that point, then you've got bigger problems.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They should not be talking.
Yeah.
So you started when you were 18.
Yeah.
And then what's the training process for becoming, I was going to say, a full-blown mortician?
Sure. So I'm living in Minnesota, which out of the 50 states is probably the highest requirement for a funeral director mortician of anywhere in the country.
You went in for it hard mode then?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, and I was living in North Dakota at the time, but I figured, you know, I went to school in Minnesota, so I got my license in both states, figuring I had some flexibility. But so in Minnesota, you have to have, you're required to have a bachelor's degree in mortuary science.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Or the equivalent of a bachelor's degree in mortuary science. And then you have to pass the state board exam and the national board exam. The state board exam actually being harder than the national. And then you have like a year of internship or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're on your own.
Right.
But so yeah, it's 4 years of school, one, I think it's like a year and a half of internship. You have, yeah, all these tests you have to take. So it's a lot.
The thing is, Death Daddy, I didn't like, no part of me expected you were going to say, yeah, you got to take exams. It's not an industry which makes you think, yeah, there's examinations.
Although, to be fair, Tom, I imagined you would need something. I don't think if someone turns up and just goes, "Can I go in and cut up the dead bodies?" They're like, "No, we're going to call the police. That's not allowed."
I don't know. It just feels like it doesn't feel like there's a qualification, which is what's so weird about it. Because obviously there should be, clearly, but you know.
From what I understand, in Colorado, which has the laxest laws, in contrast. All you have to do is hang up a shingle saying, you know, Victor Sweeney Funeral Director, and boom, you're a funeral home.
Right.
Which would be interesting.
Very.
You know, it'd be a lot easier. But I don't know if I'd want to, you know, die in Colorado.
Nobody wants to die in Colorado.
No, I mean, nobody wants to die, let's be honest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody comes to Minnesota to die. That's the place to do it.
Yeah.
And if I was going to die, I'd want to do it knowing that you would be dissecting my body afterwards as the daddy of death.
That is an honor. Yeah, you should probably put that in your will or something.
I will.
If you go on hospice, transport me to the United States into Minnesota, please.
Well, that's the plan for my, when I do go, is I want to make everything as difficult as possible for everyone. So this is another thing to add to my funeral bucket list.
Scratch that. Don't make a will.
Yeah.
So tell me, you know, this is one thing that's interesting about, and there are a lot of things, I guess, that are interesting about my job. But one thing that's interesting is if I meet a person on the street, or like, especially when I was in college, if I'd meet a person at a party or something, and they find out you're a funeral director, the first thing people do is they go, "Hey, my grandma died, and this is what it was like." Or, "I went to a funeral once, and this happened." Mm. But so I'm kind of curious. So what is your experience? You know, your dad's died in, what, 10 years ago, in your 20s?
Well, my dad died 7 years ago. Okay. Tom's was much more recent, about a year and a half, 2 years now.
Approaching 2 years, yeah.
I'm sorry, that sucks.
Well, you know, I mean, it does, but you really just stop feeling anything after a while, so, you know. Stop sucking, really.
Yeah. Well, what was your experience, Tom? And then we'll get to you.
Oh, we had a good one. We had a lovely funeral. Lovely. We got a bloke who was a sort of, I don't know, maybe a comedian / entertainer. Not really sure what his vibe was, but he came and he did a sort of, I guess, funeral patter, a prepared slight comedy funeral thing where you would tell him facts, and so he would do his light thing, and then he would go, "And of course we all know John loved Liverpool," and then everyone would go, "Ah, yes he did," and then he'd carry on for a bit, and then he'd go, "Oh, but John, he loved David Bowie, didn't he? Yeah," and then everyone would go, "Yeah," which was
Starman,
exactly. So weird. Serious fact, that was the play out music of my dad's funeral, Starman. We all got up.
That's pretty sweet.
I think it was his favourite song. I'm not sure. Yeah. I think it was. Yeah. So it was nice. It was a sort of light-hearted affair, if you like.
That's cool. Mm. Yeah. That reminds me. I probably my least favorite, but kind of funny. You know, if you're in the background, funeral sermon happens when the minister doesn't know who the person is, and they do something like this. They go, "Well, I didn't know Roger, but I do know Jesus," and they just break into it that way.
That's
probably my favorite. It's just like the perfect cop out. Nice. You don't have to like worry about actually knowing anything about the person. You just go for it.
Lovely. It reminds me a lot of what you see comedians on stage sometimes who haven't got a segue into the next bit, and they'll go, "Oh, yeah. Anyway, speaking of my girlfriend, she's from Essex, and I was in Essex the other day."
Very good.
"In a shop." And now we're talking about shops, and it's a real man called. And I like the fact that reverends or vicars or people who give sermons will do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Human, just a natural human experience. Just winging it all the time.
Just fleet of foot, and they've always got Jesus to fall back on. That's the good thing. In any conversation, that reminds me of Jesus, actually. And we're off.
Yeah, you know, really, that actually would be a fine segue for you, Richard. I could see that working.
I'll give it a go.
Speaking of Jesus, who of course died for our sins, Rich, your dad died as well. What was that?
He did.
Yes.
He did. He the thing that I was going to ask you about, Victor, is that my dad had to have an autopsy because he died very suddenly. We didn't know what happened. He was a very healthy man who woke up ill one day and then died 3-4 hours later. It took a couple of weeks, but he was, I guess, diagnosed, or they found out that he had meningococcal septicemia, which is what had killed him. And you get the rash with meningitis normally on your skin, whereas he had the rash on his organs. So when they opened him up, his organs were covered in a rash. And so what would the process be of that? If somebody came in and you didn't know, is that something that you would deal with?
So I'm not a medical. So there's like the medical examiner or the coroner who's going to actually do the autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, my primary job as far as that's concerned is taking, you know, what I receive from the medical examiner, which has varying degrees of being put back together, and actually making them whole.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Very nice way of putting it.
Thank you. That's what they pay me for, is to just couch things in language that isn't offensive.
Yeah.
But no, it's something, because your typical autopsy, like I mentioned earlier, is going to open a person from, you know, about the Adam's apple down to the pubic bone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then each organ is going to be taken out in turn, examined, you know, written down. They're going to take samples and send them off for biopsy. And then likewise with the cranium, that's what's always hard for me, is that what they do is they'll make an incision on the backside of the head, like typically kind of ear to ear.
Right.
And then that skin is peeled forward over the face. They cut the top of the cranium off and lift that off so they can get to the brain and examine the brain as well. So for my part, you know, getting the cranium back and making tiny sutures on the top of the head is always really tough, because that's not something you want, you know, leaking on the pillow when your loved one's in the casket.
Yeah.
So does it come back to you? Does the body come back to you like that? Like, without a better way of saying it, the flaps around the face almost, you know?
Yeah, usually they pull it back, and then they'll put, like, maybe a suture or two there just to keep everything in place. Same with, like, the abdominal cavity. They'll have, like, 4 or 5 sutures just to make sure everything is together. So then you have then the viscera, all the organs are in a big bag and just kind of sewn up in the abdominal cavity. One of the things that I have to do is, of course, bacteria are natural in the abdominal, you know, in your gut, and they just go haywire after you die. So that's probably my least favorite part, is treating the viscera, because you have it in this bag and you put it in a big bucket and you have to like pull everything out and like slice it with a scalpel like mix it with embalming fluid to make sure like you kill everything that's in there.
Believe that's your job. That doesn't seem to make sense, that's part of what you do. Do you know what I mean? Like, that shouldn't be in there if you're also doing all the really nice talk to people stuff. What, you're also doing that?
Yeah, it's not really very fair, is it?
It feels like it should be two jobs, doesn't it? Sort of the back room and the front facing.
Well, so in some states they have like two licenses. So you have like the mortician's license to do the back room part, and you have the funeral director's license to do the front. Mm. And I guess in my situation, I'm in a pretty small town. So yeah, you just do it all. You just do it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
how desensitized are, I mean, obviously very desensitized, but to seeing, for instance, when was the last time that you saw a dead person?
Well, right now. Yeah.
Right now.
I'm just set up in the funeral chapel and there's a casket. I'm just in the back hanging out, but just in the other room, there's a casket.
Oh, so we sort of got a fourth guest.
Yeah, so I did like makeup today and I don't know. So it's so normal. It's really funny. I remember my dad asking me, he's like, do you ever have like dreams? You know, you have dreams about dead bodies. I'm like, doesn't everybody have dreams about work? You know, you show up to work without your pants or something. For me, it's like I show up to work and there's like somebody I forgot to put in the casket, or like I put the wrong clothes on someone. Like that's like, those are like the things that I like panic dream about.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so normal, you guys.
No, I like funeral director anxiety dreams, and I want to get into that a bit more. Had one where, you've had one where the body's not in the casket. I really like that a lot. Have you ever had one where it's like they wake up, like they're not dead, actually?
I never have. I've been talking about it. I mean, maybe it'll come, like it'll happen tonight. I'll let you know. But no, I've always been pretty confident about that. Here's a story you might like. I had there was a gentleman in town, and there were rumors for like 2 weeks before he died that he passed away. He was pretty well known, but these rumors kept swirling that this gentleman had passed away. And so people would be calling us and be like, no, it's not true. Well, finally he passes away one morning at like 3 a.m. So I drive to get him from the hospital. I embalm him, prepare his body. And I put a call into his minister just as a courtesy to let her know. And she calls me back on Sunday morning. So I step out of church and I take her call and I was like, hey, you know, so-and-so passed away. And she's like, well, no, we didn't. That's a rumor. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure. And she's like, no, it's just a rumor. It's been going around. I was like, well, no. And so we argued back and forth, you know, me trying to be as gentle as I could.
Yeah.
And finally, I was like, Pastor, I was like, if he wasn't dead last night, I killed him because I drained all of his blood out of his body. I guarantee you he is deceased. And she's like, oh. And that was that.
Yeah, a real case of, I hope that wasn't a rumor, because if it was, he's definitely dead now.
Yeah. So that was, I don't know. I've never had to fight someone so hard. Like, if anybody knows he's deceased, like, I'm here to tell you, it's me.
Yeah. Do you ever get freaked out at all when you're sort of alone in a room with a dead body?
Looks pretty calm here right now.
Yeah, I mean, you are feet from a body.
Yeah,
a corpse,
no,
as we speak.
No, I get kind of scared sometimes. It's mostly when I'm working at night.
Mm.
You know, you're working at 2 a.m. and it's like, everything should be perfectly quiet in the funeral home. And our building was built in the 1890s. You know, it's really old. And so it creaks and groans like old buildings do. That's what scares me. It's not the dead body so much. It's like, you're really alone. Like I'm really alone when I'm here at night. And that kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. And of course your building was built in 1890. It wouldn't seem right if you had a funeral home that was like a new build.
Yeah,
by
all rights, it should be haunted.
Yeah,
so
haunted.
Yeah, so that's a freaks me out, just being like so alone.
Yeah,
People are like, oh, you ever talk to the bodies? Like, well, no, it's just like kind of enjoying the quiet. I don't know, but at night it's scary. Yeah, I get kind of jumpy. If I'm being honest.
Are you often working at night then?
Yeah.
Do you have to work when they die?
Yes.
I imagine quite a limited time frame.
Yeah. I mean, every hour you're waiting, you know, the body's just breaking itself down.
Yeah.
Right. So, last week I had a death call at 11:30 at night. I got dressed, put my tie on, got in the car, drove. This was the hospital was a couple hours away, so I drove 2 hours, picked her up, got back, went home and slept for like an hour and a half, and then went back to work. So I like, you know, worked from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. and then like started my day.
So, yeah. God. Yeah, because sometimes if I'll get work on a Friday, like an email will come in, and I'll think. I'll do that on Monday afternoon.
I'll wait.
I guess you don't really have that option. If someone dies, you can't sort of go, well, I've got a weekend planned, so.
Yeah, just leave mom at home. I'm kind of busy.
How big's I'll your freezer?
Like 10 o'clock tomorrow? Yeah, if you're free. Yeah. So yeah. That gets interesting. But it's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, I always, you know, and my wife kind of grouses about it because it's hard, you know, like it's bedtime. Well, sorry, kids, I got to go work for 5 hours. You know, at the end of the day, like there are people out there clearly who are having a worse day than I am. So, you know, hard to really complain about it. When you're like, oh, well, you know, so-and-so just lost their dad, you know?
I mean, don't complain to them. Definitely.
Yeah. Christ, you know, I was really like kind of doing something.
I had plans.
It's really interesting talking to you, Victor, because you know, it really feels like you both, in terms of how you appear and what you talk about, that you're very a lot further along in life than I am. I mean, you're younger than me, but you have what I would record sort of describe as an adult job. That's an adult's job, that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got a wife, you've got kids, you wear a tie, you know, like...
Well, you could wear a tie. I mean, you could do that, you know, just for the job you want.
I'd look ridiculous if I wore a tie.
He does look stupid in a tie, to be fair.
Doesn't make sense. I wore a t-shirt to my dad's funeral with a jacket over it. Is not going to last.
Was it like a tuxedo t-shirt?
It was a football shirt t-shirt.
Okay, his team. There you go.
So I sort of sneaked it, but I couldn't wear a tie. No, sir. No.
He looks like he's on a lead. It's weird.
It's a long tie. That's the problem. My tie's like 3 meters long. That's the problem, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like one of those Donald Trump dies, like just hanging down between your legs.
Just so long. What was I thinking, really? You do seem to have it together, but these late nights, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, there are a lot more fun ways to like have a late night.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels appropriate though. It feels like if you're going to be draining all the blood out of a body, 2 a.m. is the right time to do it.
It's the time to drain.
If anything, it's weirder to do that at like 10 a.m., I think.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you don't want it to seem like your workaday job, you know? Like it should be something like special. So you have to stay up all night to do it, you know?
Absolutely. How does that work out then hours wise? How many hours a week are you working?
I don't know. It just varies. I'm lucky. My employer, he grew up doing this. His dad had it before him. His dad's uncle had it before him. So it's been this family business. And he's always been really respectful. Like, hey, if we're not busy, just go home, kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been nice because you make it up. I mean, 6 hours in the morning and then like a full work day after that. Like, you can get up to 40 pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, you just don't know. Some weeks it's like, you know, I'll be lucky if I put in 30 hours just like going on Reddit at my desk. And then some weeks it's like, oh, this is my third 16-hour day in a row. All right. You know, so you just don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, because sometimes, again, just comparing our jobs, sometimes I'll get pressure from if things are slow at work, they'll be like, you have to be proactive. Do they ever say to you, do you want to maybe just go and drive dangerously around town, or
go hide behind a corner at the nursing home.
Yeah, exactly.
You got KPIs, guys. We really gotta get.
I don't know. And even like, and even proactive is like, it's funny how mundane. You know, there's like a certain, I don't know. Being on the inside, I don't see it. But like, is there a glamour to funeral service? Is it there, guys? I don't know. Is it?
I think there is to an extent.
A little bit.
It could, because it's very well dressed. You've got the
very
cool
well
cars.
Dressed. Yeah, you're well dressed, but we're talking top hats. Sometimes canes. So there's a lot of ceremony to it in this country.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah. Mm.
That'd be cool. Yeah. I want a top hat. Sometimes I have like I have a fedora I wear in the winter with my long black coat, which I think produces a cool effect.
Very cool.
Yeah.
A top hat would be better though.
Yeah, fedora sort of gives off more of a magician vibe, I'd have thought.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And that will give people false hope if a magician turns up at the funeral. Is he going to make it?
I mean, it's better than Witch Doctor, right?
That's true, yeah.
Well, what was your experience with like a funeral home? I don't know much about like UK funeral service, but I mean, like, did you work with a funeral director?
We didn't, just because it was such a sudden. I think my mum had quite a few meetings with a funeral home. I wasn't really involved in them. I just sort of just came along on the day, showed up, and it was. I mean, I dreaded the funeral, but when it happened, it was a nice thing in a strange way.
Isn't that weird?
It was very odd, and it was raining a lot, which felt right. Feels like it should be raining at a funeral.
Yes, absolutely. Every
Although
time.
I imagine that's a bit of a ball ache if you're like one of the people digging the grave. You don't want
wet soil. You don't want to be that guy. But if you're in my position, it's nice. You know, just seeing the whole effect, you know, pan out before you and not have to do as much.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels like the right weather for a funeral.
Do you think, and maybe I'll ask both of you this, here's a question for you. Do you think you would have benefited by making the funeral arrangements? Like, do you think you would have liked to have been there?
Well, I think you were involved, were you not, Tom?
I was. Yeah, I was. I was involved. It was weird. Actually, the guy... Did you watch any wrestling back in the day?
Yeah.
You know Paul Bearer?
Yeah.
If the listener isn't familiar, is you can Google him. But he's the Undertaker's assistant who sort of held this urn and walked around. He's a big lad, and he looked like a funeral director. Well, this guy who came round looked more like a funeral director than anybody who's ever lived before. Like, it's like he looked at Paul Bearer and went, "Yeah, that is the look that I will carry with me for the rest of my life." And so it was sort of really funny initially because he had the sort of similar moustache and stuff. So it was always kind of funny for me that looking back on it and at the time as well, it was sort of immediately amusing. Like, how has this happened? Yeah. What a weird cross section of my life. But the actual chatting was very, very strange. I mean, I'm actually interested in this. This was one I wanted to get into because there was a lot of upselling, Victor. There was a lot of upselling. You know, you sure you want this coffin? Because, you know, we do this lovely wicker one. We do this lovely whatever one, you know. Oh, well, we can play this song. But, if you want us to play five songs, that's an extra £20. You know, it's all that kind of business. It's a real transaction going on there. I maybe I was being a bit harsh on it because, of course, you know, that from our side of this, you know, when we're doing this,
it's you're like, only freshly grieving, you know.
Exactly. But it felt a lot like it was like, well, if you really loved him, then you'd spend a few more grand on this. Do you know what I mean? It felt like
I hate that.
That kind of
was
the balance.
I hate that. No, that's one thing that I'm really cognizant of, because you hear about these things happening, and maybe they happen in real life. You know, Paul Bearer is trying to sell you the sweet casket. I'm not interested in that. You know, like, a box is a box, an urn is an urn. Mm. You know, and that said, like, if a family wants something nice, like, I'm not going to say no. Like, you have to have a wide range of stuff, because some people, like, they like doing that. You know, like, people's love language is gift giving, right? You know, so like the person who does that, like, buys a super nice casket and they don't think anything of it and they think that's good and it makes them feel good. And like, I'm cool with that. That's fine. But I mean, I talk people down, you know, especially if like, you know, they're like, things are going to be tight. It's like, guys, let's figure out how to like keep in budget and I'll help you do that. And we'll cut corners here and there to make it work.
That's nice.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if you're on my side of the table, let's say, you know ways you can cut corners while still creating the effect that you want. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not the effect I want, but the effect the family wants. Like, you're like, we can shave off $50 here. We can shave off $100 here. We can, you know, skimp on this, but, you know, still make it look nice. So there, I mean, there are ways you can do that sort of stuff. And I don't know, maybe it's just a small town thing. Again, where everybody has to trust you. You can't really take advantage of people because everybody knows you. They know where you live. They'll egg your house if you screw up, you know. so I don't know. I can't stand that sort of crap. And I hate that funeral directors get that really nasty reputation. I just can't. Ugh.
I remember it very vividly because there was this in the UK, sort of every year we have this thing called the Argos Catalogue, which is like this.
Where is this going?
It comes around once a year, and it's basically this big department store which sells basically everything, and it's this massive book, and, you know, you flip through and all the different sections and all the different things you could possibly buy. And I just remember he brought this big folder, and in it was this one book occupying this massive folder, and it was like the Argos catalogue of death. And it was just everything you could possibly have in a funeral was in this one book, all priced out.
Flip, just tell me when to stop.
Exactly. Yeah. Just go through. Just choose what you want. It was very strange. Is it like? Do you have something like that? Do you have a big catalog of just?
Yeah, we kind of do. I don't like to use it. So I like when I'm planning a funeral with somebody, I have like basically what I've done is I make a checklist essentially with places for pricing. And then I only put on there what a family needs. So like I give them the price list. I'm like, here you go. You can look through it if you like. Here are the things that are relevant. And then on my checklist, I only have just the things you need, because then you don't have to look through all the other garbage that you don't need. And I'm not into that whole thing. Or like, here's a book of every casket we have available. Like, nobody wants to make that many decisions, you know?
Well, it's quite impersonal as well. Yeah. And you come across as someone who's really invested in making it quite a personal thing, which is a good, obviously a good thing.
Well, you try. I mean, there's some distinction, you guys. I don't know what it is between making things personal and like personalizing, if you know what I mean. Because there are a lot of funeral homes that like personalize everything, and you're like, oh, Dad loved fishing. Let's put a freaking fishing pole on everything, and like. I hate that. I'm not into
that. Let's bury him in a fish.
We better put his hat on because he loved fishing, you know? I'm not into that so much. Like, that's all well and good if you like that sort of thing. But, I mean, just trying to be a person, reaching out to other people, you know, trying to get creative. Like, that's cool. I like that. Mm. But, yeah, that whole, like, department store mentality. There was a funeral home chain, because those exist.
Yeah.
Funeral home chain who wanted to hire me, and they have increased profit sharing depending on your sales, right? Your casket sales. I don't want to be a part of anything.
That actually is KPIs for death. Uh-huh. Yeah. Just the worst.
Get a nice commission, you know, on what you schlep.
God.
Not into that.
Good. Well, that's good. It's good that there's honor in the.
There's
the funeral directing industry. how long can we steal you for today, Victor? I don't want to take up too much. Oh, perfect. Five hours. Great.
Okay, great.
Settle in.
I'll make a pot of coffee, probably.
This was all the preamble. None of this will make it.
Yeah. Let's get into the real stuff.
So Victor actually spoke to us for quite some time. He told us some very interesting things. We decided to go back to him in a couple of weeks, where he's going to talk to us about his own personal experience of grief. So that is something to get excited for. This is such a weird thing, because we're always like foreshadowing and going, get ready for this later episode where we get really upset.
Yeah. If you want to hear about a massive personal tragedy that man you just liked had, then,
You like suffering? We got a bit more where that came from. My God. There's a bit in that podcast where we asked him, I think you asked him, when was the last time he saw a dead body? And his response was, there's one opposite him.
Yeah. It was essentially another guest on the podcast.
Yeah, our first dead guest.
He was recording the entire thing with a corpse
yeah
in the same room as him.
Yeah.
Amazing. But, I mean,
it makes sense that you would get that used to death being around you, obviously. But at the same time, that is getting very used to it, you know.
It's too used, isn't it?
You feel like there are levels.
I mean, I think, my God. Imagine how much, because he's the only guest we've ever had that if midway through the podcast he went, by the way, there's a corpse in the room with me, it wouldn't be something you need to call the police about.
Well, we'll get the police involved. It was very, very, very bizarre. I also wanted to pick you up on just something you said in there. I don't know if we're planning on doing an Our Dad's Died book of quotes.
Mm-hmm.
But if we do, I think describing 2 a.m. as the time to drain was... I think that's got a real... Because I think you don't drain at 3 p.m.
You don't, do you?
Do
it would feel inappropriate.
It would feel wrong. It's also like no one's starting their day with a drain. If you didn't listen to the podcast, very confusing for you. If you did, maybe sorry.
Sorry to bring it back up again. A 9 a.m. drain would be insane, wouldn't it? And that's what they say in the mortuary business. 9 a.m. drain, don't be insane.
But drain at 2 a.m. Amen.
Yeah, something like that.
In a church, it does work. So I wanted to jump on a couple of these incredible reviews that we've had, because we've had some absolute barnstormers in. If you would like us to read your review on air, please do. Simply send it to... If you would like us to read your review on air, you have to leave it. I mean, it's as simple as that. If you want us to read it, you have to make it, Rich.
Well, that's Rich, another one of our sayings.
Tell
isn't it?
Them.
Read it, you have to leave it. That's what we say.
Give them three different ways they can leave a review for this podcast.
Oh, well, of course, first and foremost, go on Apple Podcasts, pop us 5 stars, leave a nice review. We'll read it out unless you don't want us to, in which case we won't. But do make that clear. Second way is you can go onto a website called Apple Podcasts.
Correct.
And you can leave, they have like a star rating, you can leave 5 stars there, and you can leave a little review on that as well. And then the third way, and this may shock many of you, is Apple Podcasts. It's Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. It's because Apple Podcasts is a new and noteworthy section, which I'm very keen on getting us in, because it'll massively, massively, you know, put this podcast into the eyes and ears of so many more people. So if you thought it good enough to listen to this much of it, then, I mean, you know, please, just leave it. I'm not going to beg, but please... And I won't do what I did on last week's episode, where I really tore into one of the reviews for bad English, I promise. Actually, Rich, did you listen to the last episode?
I did, yeah.
Oh, so you know. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was against it. I just want to make that clear.
I thought when I did the intro, I was like, Rich wouldn't let me do this. And then when I did the outro, I was like, well, he would never let me do this. He'd be like, well, let's re-record that.
Yeah, but sadly, I mean, I wasn't there. And if you're not there...
You're in Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. But we have got some nice reviews this week.
Yes. Really, really lovely one from Anil Grant. He's left us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Funny, sad, thought-provoking, possibly life-affirming. Should be hyphenated. Tom and Rich have great matey chemistry, and it's a pleasure listening to them bouncing off each other and finding the lighter moments that had me chuckling on the train. I've listened to both episodes currently available in one morning and can't wait for the next. Amazing. There's none of the pointless filler rambling you get on some podcasts or SAG when you start looking at your phone. It's very tight, yet natural, hilarious conversation. Highly recommended. That is really...
That's the kind of review you want to get.
That's as good as it gets. So thank you so much. Yeah. That's such a lovely thing for you to say.
Yeah, thank you very much, Neil Grant. And
I could be more critical of him, but I'm trying to be a lighter personality where I don't insult the people leaving us reviews.
I feel like when you're literally begging people to leave a review, there is a famous saying about beggars and whether or not they can be choosers.
Yeah, directly insulting to those that give them the thing they're begging for, in fact.
Yeah. So to beg people for a review and then start really slagging off the review is bold.
But life affirming should be hyphenated. But other than that, it was a lovely review and thank you so much for it.
Thank you.
Rich.
Yes, and we also got a lovely review on Instagram, which is another way that you can leave a review, but that doesn't count, just to be clear.
No. You have to leave it on Apple Podcasts. But obviously, if you do an Instagram story, so everyone you know is going to see that, then that's telling someone about the show. And obviously, we want that as well. So that's
we do also love that.
It's not a review, and technically we shouldn't be reading it out here, but we're giving you the benefit of a doubt this time. But in the future, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
We are once again proving that beggars can indeed be choosers. And can in fact be quite picky. But thank you. This was from Cat Wheel and Weightlifting on Instagram. Who left a really nice review and said, came across the Our Dad's Died podcast yesterday. I'm so glad this is here in the open. It's raw, accurate, but also very funny. Something that's needed for a world that is largely grief illiterate. It was nice to be able to relate and not feel alone in my experiences. Thank you. Well, thank you, Cat Whelan Weightlifting. That was a really nice thing to see and hear. It wasn't on Apple Podcasts, but otherwise really good.
Genuinely warmed my heart. But yeah, it did absolutely really nothing for our listener numbers in terms of getting us towards new and noteworthy. However, if someone she knows listens, I mean, you know, we're fine.
And also just one of the main reasons we started doing this was that people might feel less alone. And so if it's doing that, whether it's new and noteworthy or not, it means something. Tom, don't say anything. Stop doing that face.
Okay, I think that's basically probably a good point enough for us to wrap up for this week. If you liked this week's episode and you'd like to find more of us, you can find articles that I write on the BBC News website, and I'll pop up across BBC Output from time to time chatting about technology. And if you like Rich, you might even be able to see him in person.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Edinburgh in August for the festival. Between the 6th and the 19th of August, I'll be doing my show, Look Who Loves Me, which is a work-in-progress show, so I'll be trying out lots of new ideas, some of which will be good, and some of which will be brilliant.
Nice.
Looking forward to it. So if you're in Edinburgh, please do look it up. Look me up. If you've got any dead dad chat, I'll be happy to have a little chat afterwards. I'd love to hear from some of you in person, or see you, and maybe kiss you. I don't know why I've said that.
That sounds like something Mr. Sausage would say. See you next week.